Okay, good morning, everyone. Let's continue. So we're continuing in Perek Beis, in Perek Shira, and we are up to the Areach, the moon. So we've spoken about, again, the light, Yom, Laila. Last week we spoke about the Shemesh, the sun, and this week the Areach. What does the Areach, what does the moon say? Asa Yareach lemoadim Shemesh yada mivo'o. Literally translated, he made the moon for the festivals. The sun knows the time of its coming. So focusing a little bit, so again, quoting a pasuk over here from Tehillim, Parakuf Dalid. So chapter 104, verse 19. So Rashi comments on this pasuk in Tehillim. What does it mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu went ahead and made the moon for Mo'adim? So Rashi says, Limnos bo zmanim u'regalim. To go ahead and establish the Jewish calendar. We're going to get into this in a little bit. But as we know, Judaism is based on a lunar calendar, is based on the moon, not on a solar calendar. Just as an interesting aside, because it was important for this year, we know that sometimes the interesting anomaly we have is that our calendar is based on the moon, but yet the Yamim Tovim are based on the seasons. The seasons are governed by a solar calendar. So every once in a while you have this conflict between the lunar calendar and the solar calendar. Where does this become most acute? Most acute by the Yom Tov of Pesach. Pesach is called the Chag HaAviv. Pesach is called the Yom Tov of the spring. Sometimes, however, Pesach falls out during the winter. Remember, these are the seasons of Eretz Yisrael, not the seasons of Chutz Laretz. And therefore, again, whenever we have that conflict between the lunar calendar and the solar calendar, that's where we have a leap year. And every year, a leap year, an extra month of Av, like we had this past year, in order to ensure that the seasons are properly aligned with the lunar calendar. But in any event, Pasuk telling us, Asa Yareach Lamo'adim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the moon for us so as to establish our appointed times, specifically a mention to the Yamim Tovim, Shemesh Yada Mivo'o. The sun knows the time of its coming. So what I want to try to do for just a little bit is to appreciate the fact that we can't really understand the first part of the Pasuk without the second part of the Pasuk. So I understand the role of the moon. The moon is there for the Mo'adim. But of course, the Pasuk David HaMelech is saying is the sun knows the time of its coming. What does that phrase mean? And obviously what David HaMelech is doing is creating a contrast between the sun and the moon. See, contrast is something very important. The Maharal writes in his introduction to Netzach Yisrael that sometimes the only way to understand the true meaning of A is to understand its opposite. You could really only appreciate light if what? If you have a frame of reference for darkness. You could only appreciate bracha if, unfortunately, you understand the converse of bracha. The Maharal actually writes about this because he explains, he discusses the age-old question as to why does Am Yisrael have to suffer so much? Why must we encounter so much adversity? So the Maharal says so beautifully, because as a nation, the bracha of Mashiach, the bracha of Messianic redemption is so great, so overwhelming, so beautiful, but you only appreciate redemption and salvation if you understand and if you've tasted adversity, defeat, tragedy, trials and tribulations. We suffer so much, says the Maharal, in order that ultimately, again, to fully appreciate Messianic redemption when it comes. So therefore, again, if David HaMelech is contrasting the sun and the moon, so in order to appreciate what the moon is coming to do, we have to try to understand the sun. And especially given the fact that David HaMelech says something very cryptic, Shemesh yada mivo'o, the sun knows the time of its coming, the way of its coming. What does that mean? So if you look at the numbers 3, 4, 5, and 6 are kind of all going to follow the same theme, just develop it in different ways. Writes the Radak, and everything is really based on the Gemara in number 6. The Radak writes, V'rabaseinu zal amru, Shemesh yada mevo'o, yareach lo yada mevo'o. So what the Radak points out is something very interesting. If David HaMelech says that the sun knows the time of its coming, whatever that means, but what does it make? What does it say about the moon? The moon doesn't know the time of its coming. Okay, so says the Radak, what does that mean? Lefi sheyesh b'mahalcho orchos akalkalos ki'ilu lo yoda mivo'o v'amru pamim sheba ba'aruka upamim ba bikitsara. So the Radak makes an amazing observation. And this is not an astronomical fact but rather a way that we observe the natural world. The sun seems to operate in a much more fixed, standardized fashion. It rises in the east, it sets in the west. It is directly above head, midday. Right? Again, obviously the intensity of the sun will depend on the cloud cover, will depend on the season, but the trajectory of the sun, the movement of the sun, is very standard, very predictable. That is not true when you look at the moon, right? The truth is, you see this all the time. First of all, the moon is unpredictable. Why? Because it looks different at different times of the month. So that's number one dramatic idea, right? Remember, again, by the time we're already at this, we're nearing the end of the month of Iyar, so the moon is going to be much less visible. Mid-month, it's full. Beginning of the month, it's not there. End of the month, it's not there. At different periods of the month, it waxes and wanes. We'll discuss that dynamic in a little bit, but the moon in its shape is less predictable, and also, the moon in its position in the horizon is often less predictable. So men could relate to this dynamic much more than women, but men realize this all the time. When does this happen? If you ever see what happens in a shul on Matzei Shabbos by Kiddush Levana, right? A bunch of very well responsible, well educated men walk outside and usually spend the first couple of moments pondering a fundamental question, which is, where is the moon? Right? Where is the moon? Looking this direction. And by the way, it's not like we're not grappling with the astronomical mysteries of the heavens. Let's ask you this here. Literally, like, where is the moon? Where is it? There. And it's a fascinating idea. It's the same way that you ever have. Sometimes the moon appears very close. Sometimes the moon appears very distant. Sometimes even in the course of the same night, the moon looks different ways at different times of night. Sometimes it hangs low, sometimes it looks high up. Now, of course, there are astronomical explanations for all of these things. What the Radak is pointing out is from the lens of human observance, from the way that we observe, from the way that we see things. When you contrast the two luminaries, they appear to be so different. The sun appears to be so fixed. The sun appears to be regimented. The sun appears to have a schedule. The sun follows a clearly fixed trajectory. And the moon seems to be all over the place. The Metzud Das David writes the same thing in number 4. Lemo Adim, he writes, the moon is here from Adim for Yamim Tovim. Limnos al yidei moadei Hashem lefi eis chidusha. Yadam vo'o, if you look at the second line, number 4. Yodehu derech bo'o, the sun knows where it's supposed to go. Velo shana seder mahalcho, it never changes its journey. Velo kina yareach, but the moon is not like that. Ki pamim ba'ba aruka, Pamim Bekhtar, we're going to explain that verbiage in just a moment. Sometimes it takes the long way, sometimes it takes the short way. The Al Sheikh in number 5. V'chein hine osi arech lamo'adim, l'kadish chadashim v'likboa mo'adim. So again, we'll discuss this idea that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us the moon to establish our new month, to establish the Yamim Tovim. V'lo hodia masa yom masa laila, ki halo shemesh yadam avo'o. V'lo yishane ki areach, shalapamim yotza miyad, Ulefamim achresha, ulefamim bechatsi halayla. Here's another piece. Sunrise is always predictable and is always observable. Again, leaving aside cloud cover and things like that. But you can see the moon, isn't it interesting? Again, sometimes you can see the silhouette of the moon during the day. Sometimes you'll see it early on at night. Sometimes you won't see it in the beginning of the night. You'll see it later on at night. So again, I just want to point out, astronomically, scientifically, of course, this is all explainable. And there is a seder. What we're talking about is from human perception. From the way when we look up at the heavens and the way we see the luminaries operate, the sun is regimented, the sun is fixed, the sun's like a yekka, right? The sun does exactly what it's supposed to do, how it's supposed to do. It doesn't pop up here one day, pop up there another day. You know where it rises, you know where it sets, you know exactly what it's going to do over the course of the day. Exceptionally predictable. The moon, mamish, all over the place. All over the place. And again, absolutely impossible to predict what is going to occur from one day to the next. Sometimes it comes up an hour after nightfall, sometimes the middle of the night. Sometimes you can't see it at all. So all of these statements, the Radak, the Mitzudas David, the Alshech, are all based on the Gemara in Meseches Rosh Hashanah, which you have over here in source number 6. Tanya, Amar lehem Rabbi Gamliel lechachamim. Rabbi Gamliel said to the sages, Kach mikublani mi beis avi abba. This is the tradition I have from my grandfather. Pamim sheba ba'aruga. Sometimes the moon comes by a long path. Upamim sheba bikitzara. And sometimes it comes through a short one. So what he was saying, and again, one more time, not making a scientific statement, but rather making an observation statement. Sometimes the moon seems to take a long path. Sometimes the moon seems to take a shorter path. My time at the Bay Rabbi, Dechsev Asa Yareach Lemoadim Shemesh Yadam Vo'o. Where do we find this dynamic alluded to? We find it ultimately alluded to in the words of David HaMelech. Asa Yareach Lemoadim Shemesh Yadam Vo'o. Shemesh Hudi Yadam Vo'o. It is the sun that knows its path. It is the sun which knows its trajectory. It is the sun that knows where it's supposed to rise, where it's supposed to set, and everything in between. Yareach lo yada mevo'o. Apparently, again, the moon, however, is not so well versed in the details of its journey. Right? The moon is not as well organized. The moon is not as regular. So here's what's interesting. So by the way, if you take this understanding, so now there is a contrast. David HaMelech is making a dramatic contrast in the luminaries. Shemesh yadal mevo. You could set your clock, you could set your watch by the sun. You know, which is what people did for many, many, many centuries. Right? You could tell time, but you know exactly what's going to happen. The sun is regimented. Now, based on that, see, we were translating the first part of the pasuk of Asa Yerech Lemo'adim. We were translating it as God created the moon for the purposes. Mo'adim means what? For the festivals, Yamim Tovim. So we assume that this part of the pasuk is a reference to the fact that the moon is our timepiece for the establishment of the new month. Remember again, we don't have this anymore because Hillel Hasheni fixed the calendar as we have it today. That's why, again, we even know ahead of time when the molad, right? We know when, everyone about this, on Shabbos, we're going to announce the molad. The molad means when the first little speck of the moon becomes visible. How can you predict when the first speck of the moon is going to be seen? The answer is you and I can't. But Hillel Hasheni, who had what we call the Sod HaIbor, the secret of the intercalation of the months, knew for thousands of years ahead exactly when the moon was going to rise or going to appear at different times. That's why our calendar is fixed. So we thought, Yareach L'Mo'adim means God made the moon for the purposes of the appointed times, the new month, and by extension, the Yamim Tovim. Now we begin to see that David HaMelech is saying something a little bit different. That is true, but there's something else. If you appreciate the pasuk as a contrast, then what it's saying is like this, working backwards, Shemesh Yada Mevo'o, the sun knows it's coming, the sun knows it's when it's going to rise, when it's going to set at its appointed time. Yasa Yareach Lemo'adim. Essentially, the moon comes out when? Whenever it wants. Lemo'adim means at intervals. At intervals. When are those intervals? It's kind of hard to predict just by the koach of observation. It's kind of hard to predict, right? If I go ahead and I'm up early in the morning and I watch the sunrise, I can pretty much predict when the sun is going to go ahead and come up. The moon, however, again, asa yerech lemo'adim means the moon kind of comes up or appears, makes its appearance at intervals, contrasting the luminaries. The sun is ragil, the sun has a schedule, the sun has almost like a fixed rotation, yareach lemo'adim, the moon at different times. So what is David HaMelech coming to teach us? And by extension, what is the moon coming to teach us? So you could say, maybe David HaMelech is just making a nice comment about nature. So remember again, before this series, we spent a number of years on Sefer Tehillim, and we know that as much as Sefer Tehillim is beautiful poetry, prose, and songs, David HaMelech chooses his words very, very, very carefully. And to simply say that he's telling us about a dynamic of nature doesn't seem to make too much sense. He must be conveying to us something additional. What's the message? So I want to take you on a little bit of a journey. So if you take a look at number 7, so when are we first introduced to the moon? Now, the truth is, we're going to probably spend 2 weeks on the moon. And next week, in Meretz Hashem, I mean, it's going to be here, but they're going to spend it on the moon, right? Cogitating on the moon, right? So we're going to go ahead, and next week we'll focus a little bit more about the moon in the Genesis narrative, because that's a separate story unto itself, the tension between the sun and the moon when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created them. So that will come too. But right now, the first time that we as a people are introduced to the moon is when? Is in Parshas Bo. Parashas Bo, if you take a look at number 7, so remember again, Klal Yisrael is still in Mitzrayim. Servitude is still occurring. The Makos, the plagues, are already underway. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu pulls Moshe aside. It's Vayomer Shema Moshe, Ve'al Aaron Baruch Mitzrayim, Lemar, HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem, Rosh Chadashim, Rishon Hu, L'chad Sheh HaShana. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, this Chodesh, this month, which was a reference to which month? Nisan is the first of all months for you. So God is doing two things over here. First of all, He's establishing Nisan as the first of the months. Again, Nisan is a Rosh Hashanah in certain respects. We're used to Tishrei being a Rosh Hashanah, which is true. But Nisan is also Rosh Hashanah. But God is also doing something else which is very dramatic over here, which is He's establishing our calendar as a lunar calendar. HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem Rosh Chadashim, the beginning of this new month, which is established by the disappearance and the reemergence of the moon, this is the first month of your calendar. It is here that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives Moshe Rabbeinu the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, the mitzvah of sanctification of the new moon. But again, what God also does is establishes our calendar as a lunar calendar. This is the first national mitzvah we receive. Not the first mitzvah in the Torah. Remember again, in Chumash Bereishis, we have the concept of period of Arivya, procreation. We have Bris Milah, although Bris Milah is given again in Parshas Tazria later on. But this is the first national mitzvah given to Klal Yisrael. So in general, there's a lot of discussion as to why is this the first. Right? Think about this in just a moment. Your God, Yirah Kodesh Baruch Hu, forging a new relationship with a fledgling people. You want to give them the mitzvos. The mitzvos, remember, are part of the relationship contract between us and God. Mitzvos are not an ends. Mitzvos are a means to achieve closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to one another. So if I were to ask you, if you were giving the first mitzvah to Klal Yisrael, would you have chosen Kiddush HaChodesh? No, we don't have to take a vote. No one would have chosen Kiddush HaChodesh for one simple reason, which is why? First of all, let's be honest, we have a lot of incredible mitzvos, a lot of very exciting mitzvos. Kiddush HaChodesh, I guarantee you, does not rank on anyone's top 3, top 5, top 100, right? For very good reasons, by the way. Kiddush HaChodesh, first of all, is a very technical mitzvah that was not performed by the majority of the people, right? Remember again, I don't want to get into all the halachic specifics over here, but remember again, how did the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh happen? Before we established the calendar, two witnesses would see the moon, or would see the new moon. They would run to the Beis Din, the Sanhedrin, the high court. They would be questioned, you know, interrogated, but I don't mean in a bad way, questioned. And then ultimately, again, if their testimony checked out, the Beis Din would say, Mekudash, Mekudash. They would sanctify the new moon. They would light the bonfires. They would spread the word, ultimately, that it was new month. Fantastic. Shalom Yisrael. It was a mitzvah that 99.999% of the population did not participate in. They just didn't. It was people who saw it. In addition to that, in general again, when you speak about forming relationship, if I were to ask you, what would be the first mitzvah you would have given to Klal Yisrael, what would you say? If the goal is to forge relationship, what would be the first one? Shabbos. Shabbos is always a good one, right? Ki osi beini, right? It's an os. Shabbos is the ultimate sign. It's the covenant between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Even Bris Milah, which was done a little bit later on, that I understand how these things, which are the positive, dynamic, physical mitzvos, these are the things that we should engage with. These should be the first bullet points on the relationship contract. Yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us Kiddush HaChodesh first. Why? So there's a variety of different reasons for this. Some of them a bit more intellectual. Like, for example, the Rambam Nevuchim brings down that, you know, that the Egyptians worshipped the sun. Right? In Egypt, the sun god was named Ra, R-A, Ra, that was the sun god, and he was considered to be one of the major deities. What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? In an effort to distance us from the polytheistic culture of Egypt, what does he do? He takes us away from a solar calendar, puts us on a lunar calendar. The same way that Karban Pesach required the slaughtering of a sheep, which was one of the primary deities of Egyptian polytheistic culture. God had to do, you know, you could take the people out of Egypt, but it's much more difficult to take the Egypt out of the people. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu does a number of different things in order to go ahead and remove Egyptian influence from us. There are other reasons. Kiddush HaChodesh represents the power over what? The power over time. If there's one thing that a slave does not have, it is
time.
In fact, again, this is a lot of times we like to say in life, I don't have time. I don't have time. So this is a very important thing to stop, to remove from. There's always time. It's true, there's a limited amount of time, but the greatest decision we make each and every day is what to use our time for. So I may not have time to do X because I've chosen instead to do Y and Z. That's a choice. There's time for everything I want to accomplish, but I have to make the decision as to what I go ahead and use my time for. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did something amazing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put us in charge of time. We are in charge of time. When does the new month become declared? Right? It's declared ultimately when? When the Beis Din says, it's the new month. You know, understand this, we mentioned this before, this is a fundamental distinction between Shabbos and Yom Tov. Right, Shabbos, who declares the sanctity of Shabbos? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right, because we all know, when does Shabbos start? Right, as soon as the sun goes down, ready or not, it's Shabbos. Right, God declares Shabbos. Right, who declares Yom Tov? We declare Yom Tov. Right, we set the calendar. So when we set the calendar, we declare it. That's why, by the way, on Kiddush, what do we say? Baruch Atah Hashem Mekadesh HaShabbos. We thank God for the one who created the sanctity of Shabbos. What do we say on Yom Tov? Mekadesh Yisrael v'hazmanim. Thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for endowing the Jewish people with sanctity, and we in turn with our sanctity endow time with sanctity. We control our time. We control our time. There's another piece of Shamshon HaFol. Oh, actually, we'll come back to one more symbolism, but I want to show you something interesting. So here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes ahead and gives Moshe Rabbeinu this first new mitzvah, Kiddush HaChodesh. Brand new mitzvah, new calendar, you control time, lunar-based calendar, for all the reasons we mentioned. Rashi makes an amazing observation. Rashi picks up on the word Hazeh. HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem. This month is for you. This month. So Rashi says, we mean Hazeh. Now, the truth is, when we read the Pasuk and it says Hazeh, what is Hazeh referring to? What is it referring to? The month of Nisan, right? That's what it's referring to. Rashi understands that the Pasuk could have been fine without that word as well. Rashi understands Hazeh means HaKadosh Baruch Hu drawing Moshe's attention to something specific. Look at Rashi number 8. Niskasha Moshe Amolad Halavana. Moshe Rabbeinu had difficulty following this halacha. Remember again, the molad means what? The molad means when the moon, a sliver of the moon first appears. Now the truth is, the molad is unrecognizable to the naked eye. Right? You can't see the molad. We know it happens, but you can't see it. So God is telling Moshe Rabbeinu, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. When the moon looks like this, when the molad looks like this, then it's Rosh Chodesh. And Moshe says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I don't know what you're talking about. what are you pointing to? Right? What exactly are you looking at? All I see is a dark sky. Niskashe Moshe Amolat Halavana. Be'ezo Shir Tire V'tiru L'Kadesh. I'm just not picking it up. It's an interesting aside, by the way. There are a couple of things that Moshe Rabbeinu had difficulty with. Even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu seemingly gave him explicit instructions, he had difficulty. There's a common theme between all of the things that Moshe had difficulty with. Not our topic for today, but maybe a different time. But here's one of those items. Moshe Rabbeinu cannot figure out what the din of the molad is. So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? V'hera lo be'etzpa, turn the pages, halavana berekia, v'amar lo kazeh re'ei v'kidesh. So this is amazing. So really, apparently, according to Rashi, what happened like this is as follows. At first, God explains the halachos of Kiddush HaChodesh. God explains the laws of sanctification of the new moon to Moshe Rabbeinu. He explains it, and Moshe Rabbeinu says, I don't get it. So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu this time again doesn't explain it, but shows him. Which, by the way, just from an educational or pedagogical perspective, is such an incredible insight. Some people could learn through their auditory faculties, right? So some people could learn by hearing something. Other people need much more of an ocular experience. I need to see it. Show it to me. Explain it to me. I'm not less smart. I just learn in a different way. And the Ribbono Shel Olam, being the master Rebbe, doesn't say, well, I explained it already once. Go figure it out. Ask a friend, right? The Shmuel Baruch Hu says, my dear beloved Talmud, you are like my child. And if you don't understand it, then my job as a teacher is not done. So let's try a different way to get you to understand. An incredible Moshe models for us the right way to do everything. He models for us the right way to be parents, the right way to be mechanchim and mechanchos, the right way to interact with people, the right way to be baal chesed, the right way to have din, to have racham, everything. See here again, the great Moshe Rabbeinu, cannot go ahead and figure out what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is talking about with the molad. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no problem. HaChodesh Hazeh. See, Rashi understands that. What does Hazeh mean? Hazeh means HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I don't know what it means. I don't know if HaKadosh Baruch Hu lifted Moshe Rabbeinu up, or he brought down the heavens to Moshe Rabbeinu. Whatever happened, he shows Moshe Rabbeinu. He uses the divine finger, kiviyachol, and shows when the moon looks like this. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodesh. When the moon looks like this, then it's Rosh Chodesh. So the shaila is, why does Moshe Rabbeinu have so much difficulty seeing the new moon? Moshe Rabbeinu is up there. Hey, so what was it that was so difficult for Moshe Rabbeinu to understand when HaKadosh Baruch Hu went ahead and showed him the mola? So just understand what's happening over here. HaKadosh Baruch Hu first explains to Moshe, when the moon looks like this, it is the molad. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu points to Moshe. Right? I should say, points it out for Moshe. So remember, both of these are happening where Moshe Rabbeinu was standing with HaKadosh Baruch Hu under a dark sky. And the first go at it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Moshe, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. When the moon looks like this, that's the molad. Moshe says, I don't see what you're talking about. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes the divine finger, kiviyachol, and points to the new moon, kazeh, HaChodesh Hazeh. When it looks like that, he points it out to Moshe Rabbeinu. Why the ambiguity? Why doesn't Moshe Rabbeinu understand? So there's an amazing medrash. It's actually a very moving medrash. If you take a look at number 9. So the pasuk in Shir HaShirim writes as follows. So Shlomo HaMelech writes in Shir HaShirim, Amishkavi Balilos, Bikashti es shava nafshi, bikashti velo mitzasiv. That's actually a very moving pasuk. Remember, again, all of Shir HaShirim, an incredible metaphor to the passionate love between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. And amazingly enough, what makes Shir HaShirim a little bit confusing at times is that it doesn't always follow the same masculine-feminine assignments. In other words, sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the man and Klal Yisrael is the woman. Sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the woman and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the man. This, by the way, gives birth to this concept in Kabbalistic literature that Ribbono Shel Olam possesses the dukva and nukva. HaKadosh Baruch Hu possesses both these male characteristics and female characteristics. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu often is described, I should say, not that he possesses the characteristics, that he is described using sometimes masculine and sometimes feminine characteristics. So Shlomo HaMelech, in this pasuk over here, it's actually quite amazing. Shlomo HaMelech is portraying Klal Yisrael as the woman. Amishkavi balelos, I lie in my bed at night. Bikashti es shava nafshi, I yearn, I'm sleeping alone, I yearn for the one who I love so much. Bikashtiv velo mitzasiv, I look for him, but I cannot find him. An incredibly overwhelming passage just by itself, speaking about the dynamic that sometimes in my heart, I know that I love HaKadosh Baruch Hu so much. See, the incredible part about the Jew is that even if my behaviors are not so wonderful, it doesn't change the fact that I'm in passionate love with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? Sama nafshi le'elokim. My soul thirsts for HaKadosh Baruch Hu in every single moment. Even if my lifestyle or my behaviors don't necessarily reflect that, my heart is always on fire with love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And there are times where all I want is to be close. All I want is to be held. All I want is to feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu next to me. And I feel all alone. I feel all alone in this world. I feel all by myself. All I yearn for is that companionship, and it's the one thing I don't have. Bikashtiv v'lo mitzasiv. So look what the Medrash in Shir HaShirim writes. This is incredible. Number 10. Amishkavi balilos. So remember again, understand that all of Shir HaShirim is a metaphor. A metaphor for Klal Yisrael's past, present, and future. So what does it mean when Shlomo Melech writes that I'm on my bed at night? Zelayla shal mitzrayim. This refers to the nighttime in Egypt. Bikashtiv es sha'ava nafshi. I sought out the one that my soul loved. Who is that? Zemosha. This refers to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was searching for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Bikashtiv v'lo mitzasiv. Moshe Rabbeinu searched out HaKadosh Baruch Hu and he could not find him. What's happening over here? So the Medrash goes on. I didn't put this on your sheet. The Medrash goes on and the Medrash explains that this is actually occurring during this pasuk that we read in number 7. HaChodesh hazeh lachem rosh chadashim. Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu are standing underneath a dark sky in Egypt. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, good news. HaChodesh hazeh lachem rosh chadashim. Brand new month. The moon is coming. The moon is here. The moon has appeared. When the moon looks like this, it's a new month. And Moshe, when he says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what? What does he say? It's pitch black. It's pitch black. It's dark. There's no light here. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, what are you talking about? Of course there's light. You just have to learn to look for it. You just have to learn to see it. The fundamental tension that's occurring over here between Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu on that night of Egypt is Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, Amishkavi balelos, it's the middle of the night. Our people are enslaved. And all I ask is, Bikashti eshavan afshi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, reveal yourself to us. Make your presence known. Show us the light. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, the light is here. What are you talking about? Moshe Rabbeinu says, V'lo mitzasiv. I'm looking for the light anywhere and everywhere. But I can't find the light until HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes Moshe Rabbeinu. What does he do? HaChodesh hazeh lachem. He shows him the light. What's unfolding over here? One more piece, then I promise it'll make sense. Take a look at number 11. Right before the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, something amazing happens. Remember again, just to understand the flow, we're in the middle of the Makos. So remember, Kiddush HaChodesh is the beginning of chapter 12, Perek Yud Beis. Right before this, in Perek Yud, we're up to the ninth Makkah, the ninth plague. The ninth plague was Choshech, darkness. Remember again, just to understand the progression of events, we're going to have Choshech, we have the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, Karban Pesach, Klal Yisrael getting ready to go, Makas Bechoros, death of the firstborn was the final straw, the last plague, and then they go out. So literally again, we have over here, right before HaChodesh HaZalachem, right before this first mitzvah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in the middle of administering the Makkah of Choshech. So what happens in the Makkah of Choshech? Something amazing. Pasuk says in number 11, Lo ro'u ish es achiv. This is talking about when the Egyptians were smitten by this darkness. One man was unable to see another. V'lo kamu ish mitachtav shloshes yamim. The darkness itself wasn't just dark, but it was thick. They weren't able to stand up for 3 days. U'lechol b'nei Yisrael hayar b'moshvosam. And the entire Jewish people ultimately had light in their dwellings. Okay, so what the Mefarshim pick up on is something very interesting, which is that we know the plagues did not impact the Jewish people. They only impacted the Jews. The Egyptians, thank you. But interestingly enough, it was never phrased that way. Take a look at number 12. The Chizkuni writes, Hayu arba moshevosam, Be'eretz Goshen in Ksivkan. So remember, the psukim earlier, by the earlier plagues, speak about the fact that the Jews were not afflicted by the Makas in Eretz Goshen. Goshen is where they lived. But here the Torah uses a different phrase. U'lechol b'nei Yisrael hayo'ar b'moshvosam. B'moshvosam literally means what? In their dwelling places. So ask the Chizkuni, I don't understand. Why doesn't it just say what? U'lechol b'nei Yisrael hayo'ar b'eretz Goshen. Just like it says, the aro of the wild animals did not come into Goshen. The tzvardeya, the frogs, did not come into Goshen. The water was water, not blood, in Eretz Goshen. Yet by Choshech, it changes the verbiage. It doesn't say that there was light in Goshen, but instead it says the Jews had light in all of their dwelling places. Writes the Chizkuni something amazing. Ein ksiv kan kamo b'makos acheros shu sha'am rabasinu shona makazu mikol acheros. The Chizkuni has something amazing. Choshech was different than all of the other plagues. How so? Shafilu kishahaya yisra b'beis hamitzri b'mitzrayim haya ar imo. As opposed to the other plagues, where if a Jew ventured out of the security of Goshen, he or she would be affected by the plague, that was not true with darkness. Wherever the Jews went, even if they ventured out of Goshen, there was light. That's what it means. Ulechol b'nei Yisrael hayo'ar b'moshasam. Moshasam means wherever they lived, in all of their dwellings. Where's your dwelling? Well, wherever you are right now, for the next little while, where you're sitting, this is your dwelling. Wherever you go, that is your dwelling. Ulechol b'nei Yisrael hayo'ar b'moshasam. An incredible distinction. By every other makkah, the Jews were only safe and secure if they stayed within the protective boundaries of Goshen. You walk out of Goshen, you take your life into your own hands. When it comes to the Makkah of Choshech, or the Chol B'nei Yisrael, wherever they went, there was light. Why the distinction? So the Aruch Haim HaKadosh says something absolutely life-altering. It's not hyperbolic. So if you're happy with your life, you could leave now. Right? This is mamish life-altering. Take a look at number 13. Don't leave, though. Look at the Aruch Haim says, O the Chol B'nei Yisrael, Hayar, Diktek Lomar, O the Chol Lomar, Shekol echad ve'echad miYisrael, shaya holich lebeis mitzri, hayala or b'moshasam shalom mitzriim. So this is absolutely amazing, right? So a Jew, remember, Jews entered into the Egyptian homes. We know that Jews did leave Goshen. Why did they leave Goshen? They went to the Egyptian. Why did they go into the Egyptian homes? Right. So everyone says to see the jewelry, but there's another very important piece that the Nitziv points out over here. How did the Egyptians survive for 3 days without food and water? The Nitziv quotes a Medrash that says, we fed them. We fed our Egyptian tormentors. We went ahead and made sure they had what to eat and what to drink. So yes, we went out to seek out the gold and the silver, which was owed to us. That's back wages. But we also went there to take care of fellow human beings. So says the Aruch Haim HaKadosh, but that's an aside. That's bonus material. That says the Aruch Haim HaKadosh something amazing. He says a Jew walked into the home of an Egyptian. The home was pitch black for the Egyptian, yet for the Jew, he had light wherever he went. What's the pshat with that? Why is that? So you could say it's for utilitarian, they had to seek out the gold. Okay, look what he writes. O yichavin lomar, or zeminayin mozo, where did this light come from? Va'amar shu arbimo shvosam, v'chi ser tevas asher, v'harbi mikros yiktsu v'china kavan. Listen to this, that's Hazal. Get ready for this statement. The wicked are enveloped by darkness. This was the darkness that enveloped the Egyptians. Says Aruch Haim HaKadosh, something absolutely amazing. Do you know what the Makkah of Choshech was? The Makkah of Choshech was the internal darkness of the Egyptians spilling out from their insides and overtaking the entire world around them. The Egyptians were filled with darkness. We see this. Where do we see that the Egyptians were filled with darkness? It wasn't just Paro. Right? It wasn't just Paro. Paro was a very, very, very angry man, filled with so much darkness, filled with so much darkness. We see by the Egyptians, the stipler makes this observation. The Pasuk says, by Tzvardeya, Vatal has Tzvardeya. The frog came up, and Rashi Kodesh points, Tzvardeya is what? Singular. So what happened? The big frog, big gizunta frog, comes out of the Nile. And what do the Egyptians do? You hit it. And what happens every time they hit it? More frogs came off. So ask you a simple question. If a big frog shows up at your doorstep, And of course, your reaction is to hit it. And you hit it and you see more frogs come off of it. What do you do?
Stop
hitting it, right? That's free advice, by the way, right? Stop hitting it. Yet the Egyptians keep hitting it over and over and over. Asks the stipler why. He says, because the Egyptians were known for two terrible midos. They were shtufei zima, they were immoral, and they were shtufei kas, they were angry. And angry people always do things to their own detriment, even when they realize it's destructive, even when they realize they're destroying their own lives, when they're destroying themselves, but they get so caught up in their anger that they cannot stop. Each and every one of us, I would venture to say without exception, has done or said something so silly and foolish in a moment of anger that we would give anything to take back, but we can't. And then in our rational moment, we say to ourselves, how did I even say that? How did I even act like that? Because that's what anger does. That's like Chazal say, "Kalakois kilu oved avodah zarah." If you get angry, it's like worshiping idolatry. You lose control of yourself. Says the Arachayim HaKadosh, the Egyptians were dark. There was so much darkness filling them up inside. And you know what happens? When a person fills up with darkness inside, with negativity, with anger, with a terrible outlook on life, you know what happens? You know what happens? That anger spills out. That anger spills out. And that anger, that negativity, that darkness colors everything around you. By the way, lest you think that this is only Egyptians, the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh makes an amazing observation. Klal Yisrael's first stop when we got right after the Yam Suf was a place called Mara. So the Torah says, why was it called Mara? Ki Marim Haim, because the waters were bitter. Ask the Baal Shem Tov. It shouldn't say Ki Marim Haim, for they were bitter. It should say, for it was bitter. Water is singular. For it was bitter, says the Baal Shem Tov. It wasn't the waters that were the problem. It was Klal Yisrael that was the problem. When you're a bitter person, the sweetest waters taste bitter. When you have a negative outlook, everything is horrible. When you're angry, every person is a Rasha Merusha. When you're unhappy, everything in life is terrible, says the Arachayim HaKadosh. And this is amazing. The first 8 Makos were plagues, actually 9 out of the 10, the first 8 and the last one, were plagues that God visited upon the Egyptians. External realities that beset the Egyptians. Choshech, says the Arachayim HaKadosh, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what? I don't have to do anything to you guys. You're doing it to yourselves. Choshech was the inner darkness of the Egyptians overtaking their external world. And when you have so much negativity in your life, it paralyzes you. When you have so much negativity in your life, it prevents you from sitting up, from standing up, from sitting down, from moving, from going, from anything. It paralyzes you in life. That was the makkah of Choshech, says the Arachayim HaKadosh. HaKadosh Baruch Hu allowed the negativity within the Egyptians to spill out into their surroundings. And conversely, Ulechol b'nei Yisrael haya'ar b'moshvosam. Says the Arachayim HaKadosh, number 13. He says, Ukineged had tzadikim aleim yizrach Hashem Baruch Hu v'o'avav kitzeis HaShemesh. So if the Egyptians had their inner darkness overtaking everything around them, Ulchol b'nei Yisrael haya'ar b'moshvosam. The Jew possesses so much light, so much good, so much spiritual beauty. It's always there inside of us. We just have to find a way to access it and allow it to shine forth. In that moment in Egypt, the most dramatic of contrasts was occurring. The inner darkness of the Egyptians had darkened everything in Egypt. Ulechol b'nei Yisrael haya'ar b'moshosam. Klal Yisrael learned the great secret of Jewish success. It's Jewish light. Jewish light is something that each of us possess. Kiddusha, holiness, goodness, positive outlook, optimism, hope. That's the light that each of us possess. And in that moment when the Egyptians were shrouded by their darkness of negativity, our inner light came out and lit the way for us, allowing us to navigate the otherwise dark alleyways of Egyptian life. Go back for just a moment. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has Moshe Rabbeinu outside on a night, pitch black in the middle of Egypt. And he says, Moshe, good news. HaChodesh hazeh lochem rosh chadashim. And what does Moshe Rabbeinu say? Kadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's no light here. There's no light here. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, there's always light. There's always light. Herelo kazeh re'eh v'chadish. Sometimes there's only a little bit of light. But my dear Moshe, don't make the mistake of looking for the light in the heavens. Find the koach to look for the light within yourself. Moshe Rabbeinu is stuck in the middle of the dark night of Egypt, saying, Kadosh Baruch Hu, where is the light? Where is the light? Where is the light? Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I'll show you the light. There's a little bit of light in the heavens. But Moshe Rabbeinu, it'll never be a luminary light. It'll never be a celestial light, which dispels the light, which dispels the darkness of your Egypt. It is the light inside of you, which has the ability to dispel even the darkest night in Egypt. That was what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to convey to Moshe on that pitch black night in Egypt. We each possess light. We possess that art, that pasuk of Olachol b'nei Yisrael haya'ar b'moshevosam. I'll show you something amazing. So remember again, Olachol b'nei Yisrael haya'ar b'moshevosam is a present statement, right? And the Jewish people had light in their homes. The Svarim write down, this was not just a reality for our ancestors in Egypt. It's reality for us as well. All of us find ourselves in situations of darkness. We all have darkness. That's the nature of the human condition. We all have our dark night in Egypt. Some of us were lucky that the night is only a circumstance that will pass. Others of us live with an ongoing night. Circumstances that will not change. That they are what they are. I can't change them. But the question I have to ask myself is as follows. If I find myself in the dark night of Egypt, you have to choose a team. You're either an Egyptian or you're a Jew. And there's nothing in between. Either you're going to live a life of lo ro'u ish es achiv, v'lo kamu ish mitachtav. Either you're going to allow the darkness to overtake you, you're going to allow your inner bitterness and your inner negativity to paralyze you from moving anywhere in life, or you're going to say, you know what? There's a lot of darkness. There is. I can't deny it. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. You know, there are some people who have a wonderful perspective that everything is good. Everything is wonderful. Even in this, fantastic. Sometimes we look at people like that and we say to ourselves, what's the matter with you, right? Or tell me what your prescription is, because whatever it is, I would love some of that. There are some people who are like that, and that's incredible. All the power to them. Most of us are not like that. Most of us, when we have challenges, I can't pretend like my challenges are good. I can't, because they're challenges, and they're significant, and they're very often heartbreaking, and I'm powerless, and I can't do anything. And I'm standing in the middle of the nighttime of my Egypt. And we all have our Egypt. We all have our Mitzrayim. You know, this sermon down the Baal Shem that brings down, what is Mitzrayim? What's the shoresh of Mitzrayim? Meitzarim. Min ha-meitzar karosika. Egypt is not just a geographic location. Egypt is a life location. That's why, what do we do on Pesach? Chayiv Adam Liros es Asmo Kilo Yotzev Mitzrayim. What's the job of our job on Pesach? To see ourselves as if we left Egypt. Now, what does that mean? Right? Because why? We all have an Egypt. We bless you. We all have Egypt. Right? We all have Mitzah. We all have narrow straits. We all have difficult challenges in life that keep us confined. We're all shackled to something, someone, some reality. We're all in Mitzrayim. And there are moments when we feel like Moshe Rabbeinu, I'm in the middle of the night. I can't find God. I don't know what's happening. And in that moment, what does the Kodesh Baruch Hu say to us? HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem Rosh Chadashim. God, what are you talking about? There's no light in the sky. First of all, number one, God says, there's always light in the sky. But more importantly, there's light inside of you. There's hope. There's optimism. There's koach. Do something with your light. Don't allow it to be extinguished by the negativity of life. Find a way to amplify your light. You know, the amazing thing about light is a little, like the Lubavitch Rebbe is often quoted as saying, a little bit of light dispels a great amount of darkness. But that's even more. The amazing thing about light is if you take a beam of light, it sheds a certain amount of illumination. If you take that beam of light and you refract it or allow it to be refracted off a prism, so then that light is amplified multifold. Life is all about recognizing that although I am in Mitzrayim, some of us maybe have life sentences in Mitzrayim. It's possible. Sometimes we have life circumstances that I'm not getting out of Mitzrayim anytime soon. So my job is, even if I'm living in Mitzrayim, ul'chol b'nei Yisrael hayo'ar b'moshe osam, find your inner light. How do you find your inner light? Step one is, don't allow yourself to be overtaken by the darkness. Before you can find any light, you have to make sure that the negativity, the despair, the despondency, the hopelessness does not overtake you. Because once it does, v'lo ro ish esachiv, v'lo kamo ish mitachtov shlosh esyomim, you're paralyzed. You're not going anywhere. So the first step is, repel the darkness. The second part is, find the light in yourself. Find something that is good about life. Find something that's good. Yes, there's a lot of stuff that's Mitzrayim. Find something that's good. That's your prism. That's your prism. There's something that's good, you're going to find something else that's amazing. Once you find one thing, you know what's going to happen? I'm going to tell you. I'm not a betting man. But if I was, I would put every cent I own on this truth, which is, once you find one good thing, what's going to happen? Find another good thing. Now again, I want to be clear. Does finding the good things take away the Mitzrayim? No. But what it does do is give you healthy perspective in life. Sometimes there's nothing to take away the challenges. The only thing you can do is live life with the proper perspective. Live life with the proper outlook. Don't be a Mitzri, don't be an Egyptian, but be a Jew who carries light wherever and wherever you go. Find the light that is inside of you. Amplify it through the prisms. Find the hope. Find the optimism. Find the dreams. Find the aspirations. Find the kochos that are inside of you. That's your light. That's your light. Amplify that light off the prisms of the things in your life that you have that are good. And you will create light for yourself even in the midst of your mitzvah. To close this out, now we understand what the moon is saying. With this, we'll conclude. Number one. So remember again, what is the moon teaching us? Yarech Omer. So the moon says, listen, Shemesh Yodo Mavo. Everyone loves the sun. Why does everyone love the sun? It's always shining. Always shining. It's fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic. It's beautiful. The sun is always shining. The sun represents those things in life that represent constant simcha. Or perhaps the sun represents those people who always have wonderful lives. Everything is going perfectly. The Areach says, but I think, no offense to the sun, you have a bit more that you can learn from me. Yasa yareach lemo'adim. You see, the moon doesn't always shine. Sometimes the moon is overtaken by the darkness in the night sky. The moon says to us, sounds familiar, right? And we nod our head in agreement, of course. Because the moon says, you, mankind, and I, moon, are in the same boat. We both often have to live in a dark backdrop. We have to live in the night sky. And there are times when we feel like we are getting swallowed up by that night sky. There are times that we feel that, you know what, I'm just not shining. And I just can't shine. But here's the amazing part about the moon. Even when you can't see it, one thing is absolutely certain, which is, it's there. Sometimes Moshe Rabbeinu can't see it. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Kazeh, it's there, I promise you. I promise you it's there. I can see it, God can see it, it's there. The moon says, even when the darkness looks like it's overtaken me, I am always there. I always find a way to shine. And I always find a way to regroup. Remember again, part of the beauty of the moon, Rosh Hashanah Far Hirsch says that one of the reasons that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a lunar calendar was for us to learn from the moon. The moon waxes and wanes. Sometimes it shines bright and sometimes it seemingly disappears into oblivion. Very much reminiscent of the human condition. There are times that we shine bright and times that we are just swallowed up by the night sky of our life challenges. But the moon tells us, even when it looks like I'm swallowed up, I'm not. I'm always there. I'm always present. The moon says, I find the koach to amplify my light and to go ahead and shine bright in the night sky. I can't maintain it for very long because then the night overtakes me again. But after the night overtakes me again, I come back. That's asa yareach lemo'adim. The moon says to us, I can't always shine. But even when it looks like I'm down and out, I find a way to regroup. The moon says to us, learn from me. We also exist sometimes in a night sky. For some of us, again, Baruch Hashem, it's just a temporary night sky. For some of us, it's going to be a long lifetime, 120 years of a night sky. That's the nature of the human condition. And the moon says, learn from me. Never lose your ability to shine. Sometimes you'll shine a little bit brighter. Sometimes you'll be a bit more obscured by the darkness. But always live a life of Ulechol b'nei Yisrael hayu arbe moshvosam. Take the time to discover the light within yourself. Even if life is difficult, what are the positive traits, the positive qualities, the positive characteristics, the kochos that you have? What are the beautiful brachos that you possess? Yes, those traits, those characteristics, those qualities, those brachos do not take away all of the challenges, but they prevent you from getting swallowed up by the dark night sky of Egypt. The moon says, find the koach to shine even when the darkness is acute. Find the koach to regenerate even when life has beaten you down. Find the koach to live a life of Ulechol b'nei Yisrael hayar b'moshrosam. We should be zocha, emir tashem, to find our light, and emir tashem, take it with us wherever we go.